survive, thrive, stay alive. It's time to get prepared with the Prepping Academy Podcast.
That's right.
Hey,
and I'm alive.
Tenderfoot is alive. I am Forrest. This is Tenderfoot. We took a vacation. We're back.
You took a vacation.
I took a vacation. I went to Hilton Head Island with the family, and we did not record a show last week. No, we did not. Okay. But I feel so... I'm worn out.
I know. I was out here in your driveway thinking you were here.
Yeah, I am worn out. I mean, going to the beach with the family, you have to, like, take a few days off before you go back to work.
You got to get a vacation of your vacation.
Hey, guys, you're listening to the Prepping Academy. Again, Forrest, Tenderfoot.
Tenderfoot.
And we are coming to you this day. I don't even know the day. August 6th. It is.
Yeah.
It is. And we are coming. You got a great guest tonight. Got a coming on and... So how you been?
I'm doing great.
You don't look good at all.
I mean, I don't know. It seems like there's all kinds of things always happening. So, but yeah.
Gosh, we're doing so many things. It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, if someone was to see our to-do list, they would go, "I should not even live anymore." I mean, it is crazy. So today I was in Winston-Salem all day, drove back, had a conference call with my CPN leaders at 7:30. Immediately after finished that, starting setting this up, and then you walked in.
That's right.
And so it's been a crazy day.
I didn't even bring a six-pack. Sorry.
It's just been a six-pack of what?
Coke.
Okay, because... You know,
I was actually going to stop and get some Coke on the way.
Okay, because you know I don't drink. But anyway.
Yeah.
But it's been crazy. But that's okay. That's what life's about. We got a mission. We got things to take care of, and we're doing it. And then we got a meeting even after this.
Yes, we do.
We have a meeting. I mean, so anyway. So we're looking for, if we could have computers, like AI people replace us.
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't even have to do this.
That's going
to
be the end of us right there.
Oh, really? I do robots. I mean, I sell robots. To be sure, I can come up with a robot that can replace me. Maybe not, because it's probably my good looks. So anyway, we're winding down the summer. Kids are going to school soon.
Yes.
I'm taking my kid back to Chapel Hill, God's favorite university. I think it's next week.
No comment.
I know. I have a speaking engagement next Friday night, downtown Charlotte, with all the yuppie elites. I know they're not listening to this, but the Discovery Place. I'm teaching three classes to adults, not kids, adults, like they're premium members. So these are the arts and science people, and I'm like, oh, I'm okay. I'll make it through it. But the same class three times. But it's going to be pretty cool. Yeah. I got an interactive app, so I'm going to ask them a question. It's not even an app. It's a URL. And they're going to vote on the correct answer, and it's going to show up live on my screen as I'm speaking to them.
Now, just make sure you don't cross your classes.
Oh, yeah.
Teach them your preparedness stuff.
Well, I'm going to talk about that a little bit. I'm not going to say things like, you're going to die.
Yeah, see, I was hoping you would.
You're going to die. If you're not in a group, you're going to die. If you have no skills, you're going to die. You're going to die, you're dying. Yeah, I'm not going to do that. So, but that's why
if you're a vegetarian, you're going to die.
No, yeah. They might throw their, because there will be alcohol served, which is going to be interesting. I've never spoke in front of people drunk. So I might need security. So, a while back, I picked up a friend of mine recommended this book called Survival Theory, and it's a preparedness guide. And I started reading this book. It's by Jonathan Hollerman. I started reading this book, and if I can't even come up with a word, because everything I've been saying and teaching and preaching on. This dude was writing it down in a book, and I'm like, this guy went in my head.
Yeah.
And he got this stuff out, and he put a book out. Good, because
that's a good one.
I would say he's probably a little bit nicer than I am about some of them, but he's pretty tough on it.
The way you told me, you were introducing me to him.
Okay.
I mean, he sounded tougher than you.
Well,
I think,
I don't know, we're on the same page, I'll tell you that. And so one of the things that I like this book so much, I sent an email, I got an email prepared, it hadn't been sent, to all our members in CPN, Carolina Preppers Network, that they need to buy this book.
Yeah.
And I did put it on the Facebook site, the social media stuff. Yeah. They need to buy this book and read it.
Yeah, I got the ebook here.
Because you got it on the ebook?
Yeah, the Kindle, but I can't get it up.
And you got to, because this, I mean, this is the, I don't know, he's on the line tonight, which I am so thankful, and I'm excited to have him. We talked, gosh, it might have been 2 weeks ago, and we just talked forever. You could just tell we're both talkers. We both get excited about this. And so we're, without further ado, now you haven't read his book yet, have you?
No, I'm not.
Because I'm going to embarrass you again about having a guest on and you not reading their book. So and you can come up with your little made-up questions that I put up over.
Nice.
So before we bring him on, in just 1 second here, any author that we've brought on, have you read any of their books before they were on the show?
Before, no.
Not one of them?
Not before.
Okay.
But because
America,
of the show, they got a new fan. And
they got a new fan.
I show you all these books I got.
Yeah.
Now.
Okay. We're going to bring him on right now. This is Jonathan. Let me tell you a little bit of bio about him. He's former military. I think he's an Air Force guy. I hope he is, because I'm an ex-Air Force guy as well. But he was a SEER instructor. He has a school. I mean, he taught people in survival, escape, and evade, and resistance. He has a consulting service now called Grid Down Consulting. He's written many books. I mean, this is just the one that I picked up. I haven't read the other ones yet. I have them. I purchased them, but I haven't read them yet because I went on my vacation and I read other books. Don't tell him that, even though he's online now. I hear you laughing. But he is. He helps design retreats. His it's called Grid Down Consulting. And he is live on the air with us right now. Are you there, Jonathan?
I'm here.
Hey, Jonathan.
Awesome. Hey, thanks for coming on. Sorry we have to always start the show, and I knew you were on there. But I read this book, and it just touched my heart because you were saying, finally I met someone saying some of the same things I was saying, and you got them in a book. So I told you that I don't even have to write a book now.
Well, I was very encouraged to speak with you the other day, Forrest. Just, again, echoing some of the same thoughts I have, we really seem to be on the same page. And I will have to admit, I'm probably a little bit of a pariah in the preparedness community, I believe. And my company motto is prepare for the worst, hope for the best, let God do the rest. And, I believe that there's a serious situation coming in this country in the near future. I think it's going to be a lot worse than a lot of people think. I think a lot of people don't understand the human desperation behind that and how the psychology behind people that could be hungry and starving and how that's all going to play out. I think a lot of people assume that we're America. Americans are somehow different than other humans that walk this planet with us. And, something bad happens here, we're all going to hold hands and sing somebody up. So anyways, it was just great speaking with you the other day and bounce ideas back and forth with you. And I was really encouraged and happy to be on the podcast. And I thank you for the glowing and wonderful introduction you gave me.
So let me ask you, I got the first question because I'm kind of in your face kind of guy with my peeps, my preppers. Ooh, peeps, preppers. Ooh. No, it didn't work. Okay, sorry.
Your preps.
I'm kind of in the face about, and so my first question to you, and we talked about this. Matter of fact, we're like, okay, what do we talk about? And we kind of have some general, but my questions are blind. But I know he can handle them because we've already talked about them. But so let's say a grid down, because you're a big, you think almost everything turns into a grid down. Am I correct?
Possibly. I think a pandemic would likely eventually lead to a grid down scenario if people stop showing up for work and infrastructure starts shutting down due to lack of employees and lack of truckers crossing the country. financial collapse, that's really up in the air. Who knows how bad it could get? Is the U.S. still the world reserve currency? Are they going to pay? I don't think they could paper over it like they did last time with quantitative easing, but it all depends. But on that note, it's probably important for your listeners to kind of understand a lot of the stuff we'll be talking about today. It's really important to understand that I come at it from a long-term collapse scenario because the prepping industry is really big. So, I mean, there are prepping websites that are called prepping websites in their name, and they're teaching people how to put cases of bottled water and some MREs in their basement to survive the hurricane that's coming for Florida, right? I don't think that's prepping. I think if you live in Florida and you don't have water and food in your basement, you're not very bright, right? I don't think you're a prepper for doing that. So my kind of philosophy is, you know, prepare for the worst-case scenario that could happen in your lifetime. And if you're prepared for that, then any of these other situations that can arise, whether it be a financial collapse, pandemic, and all these things are very real possibilities in our near future. If you prepare for the worst-case scenario, which I believe is a grid-down scenario, then you're kind of set up for the rest of them.
Right. So before I let Tenderfoot in here, because I usually ask a lot of really profound questions that people enjoy, and then I let him – I'm kidding. So tell us, describe grid-down – it goes down today. What kind of – how will U.S. look and – 5 days, 10 days, 20 days, a month in your, in I'll say hour, but in your thinking through this and studying, because in studying this.
Yeah. Okay. So I just want to clarify. This is a 1 hour show, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to go down a few rabbit trails here. Feel free to rein me in whenever you want. I think that's probably one of the biggest misunderstandings. It's how I kind of got into the authorship side of when I wrote EMP, Equipping Modern Patriots, A Story of Survival, the first book I wrote. I've been reading a lot of preparedness fiction in regard, a lot of it had to do with the EMP threat or a solar flare threat, and I think a lot of the authors, they were all Americans, and we live in the richest country in the world. We live in – the amount of comfort we live in is astronomical than any other country in the world, right? And nobody here has ever experienced true starvation, true desperation. It's just not something that you can study easily through psychology when for the last 100 years we've been living relatively in peace, I mean, other than the world war. But nobody around here has ever been really starving. So – It's tough because my experience as a SEER instructor, I mean, that's part of our job is to take students' food away, take their sleep away, put them in stressful situations. And there wasn't a single class I carried as a SEER instructor where I didn't have a full-grown man at some point break down, bawling on the ground. I mean, these are highly trained pilots, navigators, flight crewmen, and that never even resonated with me until years later when I started reading preparedness fiction. And then there was a disconnect there because everybody in these books, not, I shouldn't say these books, but in some of the books were, they just kind of tick along as everything's normal, right? And
right.
That only works if they've got a full belly. The second you put people in hunger and starvation issues or in a situation like that, the psychology, they're just going to lose it. They're not going to be able to rationalize. They're not going to be able to make educated decisions. It will end up being survival of the fittest at some point in time. My first trip as a SEER instructor to become an instructor was 28 days in the mountains of Washington State. There's 6 feet of snow on the ground. For my group of 8 guys, they gave us a box full of vegetables and a goat, right? By 3 weeks in, literally every second of every day, the only thing you could think of was food. I mean, that's the only thing you could think of. What can I eat around me? And there wasn't anything because there's 6 feet of snow on the ground. And it just encompasses every aspect of your mentality. So I think a lot of people say, well, I would never hurt anybody. I would never, you know, I would never be a looter. I would never steal anything, right? And I think that's because they've never been in this type of situation. So I use the analogy of, you know, 3 weeks in, 4 weeks in, 2 months in. Let's say you have the average blue-collar worker in middle America in a suburb town, and he's got a four-year-old daughter that's laying on the couch that he hasn't, not just so she's starving, but he hasn't been able to get her food, his daughter food, for 2 or 3 weeks straight. She's on her deathbed. That man will do, or woman, mother or father, will do anything to get that kid some food. They may beg or plead from their neighbor at first, but eventually they're going to come and take it by force, right? So a long-term grid-out scenario, whether it's by an EMP, solar flare, cyber attack on the grid, which is a growing threat, or a physical attack that brings down the grid, there's so many different scenarios and ways that we can lose the electric grid for a long period of time. It's a very big vulnerability, and every aspect of human life revolves around electricity, your heat, AC, your information sources, food, the big ones, food distribution. Interstate trucking shuts down, the food distribution centers shut down. And that's the big thing, because when people start to starve, it's gonna become a madhouse. It's going to be Mad Max before a lot sooner than people think it will be. So,
and America, Americans have never seen this before. I mean, other countries have seen this. Argentina's seeing that right now.
Right.
But so, I mean, Americans in general think other people, like you said, are good people.
Yeah.
But they've never seen someone that they can't feed their kids, because even, you know, I do a homeless ministry thing in Charlotte, and you talk to all the people that, you know, work in the homeless ministry down there and feeding the homeless in Charlotte. There's not a single meal that goes by that a homeless person can't eat downtown. There's a meal provided every single meal. Downtown, and so all you got to do is get down there. But Americans have never seen people that actually have to eat their tennis shoes because they're so hungry, the leather on their tennis shoes. They've just never seen that, and they think that little aunt, you know, their neighbor Jen, whatever your neighbor is, could never harm you. But if she can't feed her kid, she will absolutely harm you.
Well, here's a big asterisk for that, too, because you mentioned Argentina, right? And I've heard a lot of people quote Argentina. I've heard a lot of people quote Kachina and instances like that. I've heard people quote third world countries overseas when talking about human desperation, starvation, and none of them are accurate. First off, overseas, the Congo, Mogadishu, places like that, they went through famines, warlords were taking the food, so on and so forth. But those people generally grew up hungry. They generally grew up starving. Their entire life had dealt with starvation and hunger, right? So putting them in that situation, while it was a worse than normal situation, their brains were already wrapped around going days without food in most cases. And if you look at Argentina still has an electric grid. They still have TV, radio. The government's still out there with the propaganda, keeping people calm as long as they can, right? And if somebody goes and steals something, they're going to take them behind the building and shoot them, or at least put them in jail, right? So it's not the same scenario, because if you take away people's food, they're going to get desperate and, you know, they're going to be angry and mad. But if you take away law enforcement and oversight and the rule of law at the same time you take away people's ability to feed themselves, it's going to be mayhem, because that's the thing that holds us back in society. And you mentioned, you know, a lot of Americans think that we're generally good as a species. And that's just factually untrue from a psychology standpoint. So this idea that we somehow as humans evolved in the 21st century past, you know, the caveman days is just factually not true. The reason it looks that way and appears that way is because if you go out and steal something today, or if you go out and hurt somebody today, you go to jail, or you get the death penalty. There are serious consequences, and that maintains a level of civility in our nation, okay? But if you take that away, and you put people in hungry, desperate situations, and you take away the threat of consequences for their actions, it will be every man for themselves. And I think that's one thing that's kind of overlooked and bypassed when dealing with this specific subject as far as a long-term grid-out scenario. Because, again, It's completely different. Somebody could read my book, Survival Theory, and be like, that's, you know, that's very extreme, because their mind, this entire prepping journey of theirs, has been wrapped around a financial collapse or a pandemic or something of this nature. In those situations, you have data points. You have the ability to kind of rationalize how humans are going to interact in those situations, because you can look at other history or different time periods, the Great Depression, or, you know, a pandemic situation localized. But a grid down scenario is something that we have never experienced. If with no food infrastructure, no information sources, no radio, no TV, no heat, no AC. I mean, you go down the list. It's going to be really bad. And I think a lot of people really think that the government's going to step in somehow. You know, in all the Hollywood movies, you see the troop carriers rolling down and they're passing out MREs out of the back of the truck. That's never going to happen. I can guarantee you that's never going to happen. I've got a DOD report on my website. I've got multiple reports where they're warning Congress that right now 99% of the U.S. military's infrastructure is reliant on civilian electric grid. So obviously the nuclear triad, Cheyenne Mountain, the bunkers, things of that nature, they're EMP protected. But 99% of the military is relying on the civilian electric grid. And this report tells Congress, if we lose a civilian electric grid, the U.S. military will run out of backup power within 2 days, and we will not be able to respond to societal collapse scenarios. So
they'll be in the same place we are.
Except they'll be much better armed.
Yeah, they'll be in the same position we are. They'll need food, they'll need communications, and they won't have it.
Well, that kind of brought me to what I was thinking with this, and I was thinking just the other day, you know, Forrest talks a lot about, you know, bug out locations. Eventually, you're bugging in. You know, I don't, unless you have multiple bug out locations. And not every prepper is going to, the perfect scenario is not going to work out for them. I get to my bug out location, that's where all my food is. You know, my take is you've got to have where you are right now ready to go. And if you are fortunate to have a bug out location, it's got to be ready to go. But you've got to be prepared. You get to that area, to that thing. You're talking about a grid down situation here. Worst case scenario, even your bug out location is done.
It's compromised.
We're all going to be, I think, in a situation like this, all on leveling on a level playing field. And what you just said about the arms, that is going to be the biggest. That's going to be the biggest difference right there. Defense.
Yep. Go ahead, Jonathan. No, you go.
Yeah. I'd have to respectfully disagree with you on one instance. So
yes.
I think, all right. So I think that is a pretty common narrative in this industry, as far as, and trying to figure out how to quantify this. Okay, so through Grid Now Consulting, I work primarily with wealthy individuals. Okay, wealthy families, business people, lawyers, doctors, so on and so forth, and I help them design and build off-grid survival retreats. And one of the number one aspects of doing that is getting a way of minimizing your interaction with people. The more people that you interact with in this scenario where everyone is hungry, starving, you have no idea what to expect or how they're going to act, how they're going to react, the less people you can interact with, the better. So most of my locations are very – there's 100 data points that I look at when researching property for the clients. It's got to be extremely tucked away, end of a dead-end road, not visible for – I mean, we could get on a list of the stuff I look for. And – you know, their gate at the front of the property, I have misdirection signage, so it doesn't look like a driveway. It looks like an access road for a cell phone tower or a gas line. There's a bunch of stuff that I do. If you could do that, okay, then you have a pretty good chance of riding this thing through. And then the second thing I do when I build these retreats is I don't build Fort Knox. Now, there are some really, really great security aspects that I build into my properties and my – off-grid survival retreat designs. I do a lot of the architectural plans. I work with an off-grid architect out in Idaho. But the thing is, it doesn't look like a fortress. We're not building steel shutters on the outside of the house. We're not doing anything that screams prep or retreat. And in my philosophy, the best thing you can do is have a tunnel network to get out the back door and let them come in, take 5% of your stuff. All my clients, I recommend they have 90 to 95% of their food outside the four walls of their house, not in their basement, in an underground storage cache, somewhere away from their house. That way, if a large looting group does come, they can leave out a tunnel system, let the looters come in, steal 5% of the stuff, move on down the road. They can move back in. They took all their food and their primary supplies. So that's what I do with wealthy individuals, okay? And the problem arises is the average Joe. Okay, I'm an average Joe, too. I've been a blue-collar guy my entire life, worked construction, so on and so forth. So I'm not independently wealthy by any stretch of imagination. So working with people, I started getting a lot of clients and people contact me wanting me to help them, but they didn't have a $500,000 or $2 million to build an off-grid survival retreat on 1,000 acres somewhere, right? So that's the reason I wrote Survival Theory. It's called A Preparedness Guide to How to Survive the End of the World on a Budget. But here's the thing. Regardless of your financial situation, I wholeheartedly stand by the fact that if you live in or near a city, you have to leave. You cannot prepare in place in a city, in a suburban area. You can't do it. Because here's the thing. I hear this all the time. Well, I'm going to work together with my cul-de-sac, right? And we're going to form a mutual assistance group, and we're going to walk patrols. We're going to all work together to grow food and so on and so forth. But here's the thing. Let's say you have 6 months of food in your basement. Guess what? There's 20 people on your block, probably more. Guess whose food they're eating, and guess how long that food's going to last? It's going to last 2 weeks, tops. Oh, well, I'm not going to share it because I bought this food. You really think so? Yeah, that might go by for like a week or two, but when they're starving and you're the only one not getting skinny, they're going to notice. And they're going to come and take that food regardless of your little group that you've got going or not, okay? So that's going to be a big downfall of a lot of the retreats that I go and I visit and I do analysis for. If they don't have enough food, and they're probably going to end up bringing more people, more extended family than they plan to. You know, that's a common thing I hear. Oh, it's just me and my wife and our two kids. I'm like, yeah, you're really going to drive by your mom and dad's house and knowing they're going to die and just leave them there? You know, your brother and sister. And there's all these things. So that's one of the big conversations I have with my clients when I first go out there is, okay, we need to figure out how many mouths to feed are going to be at this retreat before we start buying food. Because if you don't have enough food to feed people for at least a year, you're probably not going to make it. So I guess the thing is, so here's the thing. I absolutely, wholeheartedly, there's a lot of other experts in this industry that will soft pedal things. They'll teach you how to hide your food garden and your blended in with your backyard in suburbia and how to make your house look like it's downtrodden or this or that. You're not fooling anybody. Your neighbors are going to figure this stuff out. You think you can run a hoe in your backyard and nobody's going to know because you got a 6-foot privacy fence or because you planted thorns around your backyard? I'm not disparaging them doing that because I know it comes from a good place. They want to help people. But I don't think you're helping people by telling, oh, yeah, it's no big deal. You got 10,000 starving people surrounding the location where you lay your head at night. You're going to be just fine. I don't think, you know, I don't soft pedal stuff. I think you're doing more harm than good. So then, and I know I'm rambling here, but on the
no,
flip
Jonathan,
side of that, the next big question is why I can't afford a survival retreat, right? What do I do? Because the idea of going up and living on the national forest and living off the land is clown shoes. You know, I hear that all the time. Well, I'm going to go live in the national forest. Guess what? I've done that. And guess what? You can't do that. Okay. And even if you could convince me that, you know, you were raised by a pack of wolves in Alaska because you're left on the side of the road and you have the life skills to survive, even if you could convince me of that, okay, what you can't convince me of is the other 99% of the Yahoos that plan to take their Kelsey backpack out in the woods and survive with their Pappy's shotgun, guess what? At some point in time, you're going to have to build a fire. You're going to have to cook meat. You're going to have to shoot an animal. You're going to have to sleep. At some point, someone's going to stumble across your camp, and they're going to shoot you and go through your pack. Okay? So the idea of lone wolfing is, so I don't advocate that, but I do recommend you have to get out of town. And if you want, you know, I'll take a step back here, but I do have recommendations on how you can do that on a budget, even on a really tight budget. But the key is, get away from the mass population centers. If you're surrounded by hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of people, it's just a matter of time till your door gets kicked out. I don't care if your entire family is SEAL Team 6 and you have a bunker in downtown Atlanta. You're going to get overrun at some point.
Hey, okay, Jonathan, I let you go so long because it sounded like me for the last 4 years, and I'm like, yes, someone else is saying this. It's awesome. So one of the things that I've been, and you said this, the first 6 months you want no contact with nobody, zero. You don't want any. You don't want smoke. You don't want sound. You don't want to even go hunting. I mean, all these people go, I'm going to go shoot animals in the woods. Well, as soon as you shoot a gun in the woods, you're going to have to, you know, you're going to have to share that with 15 other hunters that come up because they're going to hear your
That's
gunshot.
Right.
And then
if you're press rifles in your state, but I digress.
And you've got to, and you know, we have people in the CPN that goes, well, we're going to bug in, and I'm like, okay, I did find a tool. It's not 100% accurate, but you can literally put your address in, and it tells you within 1 mile, 2 miles, 5 miles, how many people were within your house in a radius. It tells you how many people. And it's not 100% accurate, but, I mean, some of these people are like, well, I've only got like 4,200 people within 2 miles. I'm like, yes, and they're all going to come get your food, and you're going to end up dying. But that's not a lot of people. I'm like, oh. So I've been preaching, you've got to get out. You got to have a group. You got to have skills, and you got to have more food than you think you need. And you've got to absolutely disappear for 6 months, at least.
Yeah.
And
so I've got a new client in Portland, and he's a wealthy individual, okay, and he's getting ready to build a survival retreat. But due for whatever reason, it's going to take us a while to find a property. It's going to take a while to – it might be a year or more until he has his survival retreat built. So in the meantime, we need a plan B for him until his survival retreat and his group is formed and everything's ticking as usual. So what I did with this client is I went online and I went through probably 50 bed and breakfasts, dude ranches, guest farms in his in that area, and I started by looking at the location. How far off the beaten path is this place? How, you know, so on and so forth. And then I went from there, and then I looked at the bed and breakfast owner's bio, and I looked from a satellite view and looked to see if they had a large garden, and do they have animals there at the location? What does their bio say about them? What do they look like? Who are they? And then what we did is we took this client of mine that has a whole bunch of, you know, years worth of food and guns and all kinds of stuff in his basement in downtown Portland, right? And what we do is we got a climate controlled storage unit within a mile of this location. He hasn't done it yet, and he's gonna cache all his stuff there. And then what I'm having to do is he's starting to spend time at that bed and breakfast. You know, once every 2 months, he's going to start staying there. Get to know these people. Not mention the word prepping. Just get to know them. Get, you know, be friendly with them. And then when the collapse happens, he can knock on their door and say, hey, I've got food for me, for you. I've got guns for me, for you. I've got survival seed, or I've got, you know, plenty of gardening seed. So, you know, if you can make that pitch and explain to the person what's going on, the person that you already know, and I think that's a lot better scenario, okay? And then we have a fallback bed and breakfast you're going to stay at, and so on and so forth. So anyways, you can put contingency in there. Is that the best case scenario? No! That's a terrible scenario, okay? But it's a heck of a lot better than trying to ride it out in downtown Portland, okay?
Right.
You have a better chance of surviving than doing that.
And, Jonathan, I don't even remember reading that in the book, but that's exactly one of the, you remember the Shemitah? when this everybody was freaking out because of Smita year and the blood moons and all this stuff. Was that 2 years ago
yeah.
now?
The Mayan calendar or whatever. Yeah.
And I was telling people to do that same thing. I said, you know what? It's amazing. You can go on the VRBO, whatever it is. You can go onto that site and to other vacation home sites, and you can find out if someone's in that house tonight. And so you monitor that, and that is an alternative bug out. Look, I've been saying that, dude, I get excited. I mean, because literally I've been preaching this gospel, and people looking at me, and they're like, well, okay, I think you're right, but I don't want to believe you. And,
well, here's the thing. There's a perceived confidence. There's a perceived level of safety in the home that you've known and loved for years. Okay, people don't want to leave it. This is their safety zone. This is their castle that they come home to every night. And I hear a lot of times, oh, I'm going to ride it out, until it gets bad, and then I'm going to leave. I'm like, no, that's a terrible idea. If it's so bad that you have to leave your house, you sure as heck don't want to be traveling on the open road at that point.
It's too late.
It's too late. If you're pushing a grocery cart or driving a car laying down with supplies, and you think you're going to make it from 3 miles down the road without getting ambushed, you're crazy. So my recommendation is day of event. There's still going to be a lot of people wandering around, not sure what's going on, confusion. I think that day one, I recommend having a lot of cash on hand at your house. If you can get the stores, the manager, they may be closed, the manager may still be there. You may have time with cash to bribe a manager to get some last minute things that you never got a chance to get or this or that, and then leave the following morning, early in the morning, the following day, once the streets have cleared and everything, get out of town. But if you sit there, because this is your home, this is where you love, and you think you're safe here, if you wait till it gets that bad, and it will get that bad and even worse, it's too late. You're stuck. You're not traveling at that point.
Right. So also, the same thing goes with, I believe, with your bug out location. If you get there and, all of a sudden I started this about two months ago, that all gun battles are bad. And so if you get in a gun battle to defend your retreat, you're screwed. You don't ever do that. Let them have your retreat for a few days. You don't have maybe, like you said, 5-10% of your food there. Then you come back, and then you either you take your retreat back. I'll say that.
Well, that's what I was trying to get at earlier.
Absolutely.
And that's what I'm saying.
Absolutely.
So if it's been compromised.
Okay.
Yeah.
So. But all gun battles are bad. Don't ever. Well, I know we train for it, but it should be defensive only because people get hurt and die in gun battles.
Yes. That's literally almost verbatim what I wrote in my book. So the preparedness genre, mine included, I'm guilty. Preparedness fiction is full of lots of gun battles and everybody, and the main characters are always walk away unscathed, okay? If you get in a gun battle with a group of looters at your retreat, there's somebody in your group that's almost assuredly getting shot. Well, the book is always, the rednecks climbing out of the pickup truck. Well, guess what? Rednecks know how to shoot a run of deer with their .308.
Right.
But the fact that it's not, and I'm not taking away from having the best weapons possible, and more importantly, the best professional tactical training that you can get. But it is always used in a defensive, bounding retreat. And I talk about this all the time. I mention it in my books, different scenarios. If the bullets start flying, your first thing is to lay down heavy cover fire and get the heck out of there. And then, if you have to take the fight to them, take it to them on your terms. Make them come to you. Don't go to them, right? And so, again, like you just mentioned, a house and some stuff in it isn't worth dying for. Isn't worth watching your teenage kid or your wife get shot. Because guess what? There's no forward operating base. There's no military helicopter that's going to come and fly to the latest and greatest medical technology to fix your battlefield wounds. Chances are there's probably not an emergency room doctor at your retreat, and probably that person's going to get an infection and die. So yeah. The idea that you're going to be running around like John Rambo and just and the worst ones are like the books where they fight, you know, they fight an invading military force or the U.S. government's coming to take their guns and they fight the military. I'm like, give me a break. If you go toe-to-toe with the U.S. military, maybe back in 1970 you could have with guerrilla tactics, but if you go toe-to-toe with the U.S. military, I don't care how crazy, you know, tactical your band of merry men is, you're gonna get your you-know-what handed to you.
Yes. So one of my friends, well, I got several friends who are actually listening live. I didn't send it out to a lot of people, but we were recording live. One of my friends, part of the sisters, so we have these two sisters, she says that I have the biggest man crush right now. She didn't know who's more excited to talk about this, me or you. And I have another friend that wanted to ask you a question. He's the one that read your book. He read your book, and he's the one that recommended me I think he's the one that recommended me to read your book. And his question was this, because this is what he's going to talk about at his meetup group, I think this coming week. Let's say that you've lost everything. You have none of your supplies. You have nothing. It's you and your family, and everything's been taken. You might have a gun, a few supplies, and you walk up to a well-armed retreat. What do you tell them? What is your gate speech is what he calls it, to get into the group? That's a good question. I've never really thought about that. Would you go over your skills?
Please? Yeah, that's all you've got. You better have some serious skills on the gardening plot, on the first aid front. You better have guns and ammunition. You better know how to use them. If it's one of my preparedness retreats that I designed and that I work with the clients, guess what? You're never making it to that gate. And if you do make it to the gate, there sure as heck ain't going to be somebody walking up that gate to chat with you about it. Okay?
Right.
So,
yeah.
That's a tough scenario. Because it's a good question. Don't get me wrong. It's a good question. The easy answer is if that happens to you, you're pretty much screwed. Okay? I think a lot of people will soft pedal stuff, but I mean, heck, if you lose all your supplies and you're just traveling with your wife and kids, man, you've got some hard decisions lay ahead of you as to what you're going to do and where you're going to go, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, the first thing is, if you found a survival retreat, it's probably not that good of a survival retreat because you found it, first of all. Okay?
Yeah, that's
true.
If you
did find it, but if you did walk up to the gate, that's what you better be a dang good salesman. You better be able to pitch yourself and your family, and you better have a whole bunch of bullet points you memorize in your head and try and get them off as fast as possible. And then at that point, it's just going to be a matter of whether or not they have the food to take you in. And here's the thing. I've got hundreds of clients all over the U.S. I was in five states last month. I'm going to be in six states this month. I just got back from a back-to-back trip. I can tell you the single biggest issue I see when I fly out to do an on-site survival retreat analysis is someone spent $500,000 or $1 million in a bad location, right? They just happened to have this property. It was their family property, and they put a bunker on it in the backwoods, but the house is visible from, you know, it's 50 yards off the road, okay? So that's the first thing I see that's fairly commonplace. The second thing I see that's very commonplace, which I kind of hinted at earlier, is the fact that probably 90% of the people that consider themselves preppers don't have near the amount of food that they think they have. Okay, I hear this all the time. I'm on my first initial consulting call with a new client. He's like, oh, yeah, I've got a year's worth of freeze-dried food. I said, okay, tell me about that. He's like, oh, yeah, I bought one-year food supply for me and my wife and my two kids from my Patriot Supply or Wise or whatever the case may be. And here's the deal. That's 4 months' worth of food. Because it's one of the dirty little secrets in our industry. The preparedness industry, I have never met I won't go that far. I've hardly ever met a person I didn't like, okay? Every single one of my clients, you know, salt of the earth, sit down, you know, at a restaurant and have a normal conversation with them. I've never met any of the kooks they have on Doomsday Preppers, right? And, like, everybody is normal. The industry is great. But the long-term food industry is about as crooked can get, okay? They sell their food based on serving sizes, and on average, those big one-year food plans you buy, on average, they come with about 800 calories worth of food. That's a starvation diet. If you eat 800 calories a day for the average man and for a year, you're going to look like a Holocaust survivor if you make it that long, and you're going to eat your food way faster than you think. The only way to buy long-term food is to go to a basal metabolic calculator, find out exactly how many calories each member of your family needs based on height, weight, sex, age, all those things, and then buy your food based on calories. If you do that, you're going to realize really quickly that these one-year food plans, they're almost criminal in the amount of calories they sell you in a one-year plan.
Right. Okay, yes. Yes, so, you know, I
hate to interrupt, but I hope I didn't just dime out any of your sponsors.
No. I told you I'm a reseller for Legacy, and I still tell people to do the math. It's all about math. How many calories? How many calories? Not how many pounds it is. Not how many servings. How many calories? Uh-huh. And then how many calories do you need a day? Well, you need more than 2,000. You need at least 2,500, maybe 3,000 calories a day. And you do the math.
Right.
It's all math. And they're going to lie to you.
It is.
I
sell a spreadsheet. I have a long-term food spreadsheet on my website that I sell. And I've got a year's – I spent weeks and weeks putting this together. And, you know, if you buy the average family of four, and I forget the ages and the weights and all that stuff, but it came out to be 2.2 million calories for the year. If you buy – Mountain House, by the case of number 10 can, at the cheapest places I could find each case, some was at Costco, some was at Walmart, some was here, some was there, it came out to be $24,000 for a year's worth of food for Mountain House, to get a year's worth of food. If you buy it via staples, like 6-gallon buckets of rice, beans, oatmeal, pasta, and all the things that go along with that, from a company like Rainy Day or Augate and Farms, if you buy it in bulk, I've got a family of four, 2.2 million calories with lots of different types of meals, down to under $4,000, less than $1,000 a person. So it's just a matter, like you said, it's about the math. And every one of my clients, when that's one of the first homework assignments I do. They're like, well, I got some food here, and I got some cases of this, I got some MREs, I have some canned food in my basement. I said, okay, here's the spreadsheet. Put all your food on there. It's going to take you some time. But then you know, to the day, how much food you have for your family, right?
Right.
And it's a time-consuming thing to do, but it's almost always an eye-opening experience for my clients. And, I mean, I've got clients that have $150,000 worth of guns and ammunition and tactical supplies, and they've got $4,000 worth of food. I'm like, dude, come on. You know,
right.
You can't eat
uh-huh.
that 308 ammunition. So... Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So people need more food. They don't need to be in gunfights. They need to have multiple bug out retreats. Things are going to get worse than they expect. What other advice do you have for us?
Well, I wouldn't say multiple bug out retreats. I mean, I think you have a primary retreat. Most people can't afford to try and outfit multiple locations because, I mean, there's things like water. And, you know, if it's not a bed and breakfast, if it's not a, you know, a cabin rental or, like you said, a vacation home that's not being used, and, again, you better make sure that's in a good location, not visible from the road, long driveway, things like that, good sight lines for offset, for wash locations, so on and so forth. And maybe you go to your cousin Charlie's farm, or that's your plan. Maybe he's a left-leaning liberal farmer, and he thinks you're crazy person at the family get-togethers for talking about prepping. So don't talk to him about it. Just plan to show up there with food when the time comes, and he's going to think you were a genius. So having a single location that you wrap your brain around, and then obviously you got to have a fallback location, a shack in the woods or a location everybody else knows to fall back to if the place was overtaken. And like Thunderfoot mentioned, yeah, that's right. You get out of there, leave it, let them come in and take what they can, and chances are they're not going to stay there, because if it's a professional looting force that's going, you know, cabin to cabin and farm to farm, you know, once they clean out the inner city, they'll be traveling in the countryside. And some of these looting forces, they're gonna be, if they get out to where you're at in the country, they've been looting for a while, and they're really good at taking down a location. They're gonna study you for a while. They're not just gonna like charge the beaches of Normandy and, you know, take on your gunfire. They're gonna be smart about it and come at you, right? And so you have to
right.
get away from that, because chances are, as soon as they go through your place, they're gonna move on down the road. And they're not coming back. They just, they think they cleaned you out, right? So, yeah, I think you're in a lot better situation if you run from the bullets and then live to fight another day. I tell the people, I'll say, live to fight another day is what it comes down
right.
to. Because if you get shot in the melee, you know, you don't have options at that point. So
if I remember right, you are writing a sequel to this book currently. Is that true?
It is true. I am writing two books at the same time because apparently one book wasn't tough enough for me. But I'm writing a sequel to Survival Theory. I'm writing Survival Theory 2, which is it's going to be in a Q&A format. So over the years, I've gotten tons and tons of emails from people all over the country and some all over the world asking me questions about solar panel systems or this or that, or what do I think about this or that. And I was like, you know what? Obviously, I'm removing any nomenclature names or cities they live in, and I'm going to compile a lot of my answers to a lot of these questions that people ask me. It's going to be kind of a Q&A format. It's going to include a couple articles I've written on the subject with a little more in-depth writing on it. So that's going to be Survival Theory 2. I'm going to cover a couple new subjects. One is going to be on potato seed, true potato seed, TPS. It's kind of an interesting new thing that's coming out. I'm going to dig into the cyber threat a little bit more because I think that's a growing threat with quantum computing. That's in our near future. So that's going to be Survival Theory 2. And then all the fans that are listening that read my EMP series, I'm writing the next book in the EMP series. So,
awesome.
I hate putting deadlines out there. I'm hoping to have both out before Christmas, but I'm definitely gonna have one out before Christmas.
Okay. And so, you, Tenderfoot, I know you got a profound question
well,
that's going to intrigue us all.
I now have a Christmas gift for you.
Oh.
Yes. It's going to be
thanks,
Jonathan's
man.
Book. Sorry.
Thanks, man.
I spoiled
now,
it.
Now, you've written some other books, and they are EMP-based. Tell us about them, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure. So the first book I wrote was called EMP, Equipping Modern Patriots, A Story of Survival. And I wrote that, 2013, maybe. And I never took English composition classes. I was a military grunt. I worked construction. I was a carpenter. I owned my own business. I flipped houses for a while. So it's kind of I started reading all this EMP fiction, and they just didn't understand the human psychology behind it. And so I wrote EMP, Quirky Water Patriots, thinking, you know, maybe this will sell 20 copies to my military buddies. And it started selling like 20 or 25 copies a day. I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. And so a couple of weeks later, I leave for hunting camp, and I didn't check my sales. I come back a week and a half later, and I was selling like 150 a day. Then it went to 200 a day, and then 250. It just kept going up and up. I ended up becoming the number three book on the post-apocalyptic genre for about 4 months. So it was really successful, and then I had to rush out and get an editor.
Right.
Yeah. Because I had a friend who said they were an editor, but apparently they weren't, but I didn't know the difference.
Right, yeah.
So I had to go out and hire a professional editor and get it edited. And then I wrote the follow-up book, The Aftermath. And then just last November, I released the third book in the series, which is called New Beginnings. And a couple things on it is, being ex-military myself, I really hated how a lot of authors really push the government. Well, the government is evil, but like the military is evil, right? They're coming for your guns. This military chopper is going to show up in your town and tell you got to turn in all your guns. I just don't buy that at all. So I wanted to paint the picture, especially in the second book. I started explaining like more of what's going on to the rest of the country and painted a picture of how I saw the collapse happening and how the military would respond, how the government would respond. And so the second book picks up a the perspective of a commander of a battalion in the Test Mountain Division, and basically, so I wrote it from the military perspective as like a secondary character in the second book, and I just wanted to kind of paint my idea of how the military would respond, because, you know, I just don't buy the narrative that the government's going to tell the military guys to go in and blow up this town, and, you know, some 21-year-old red-blooded Americans would be like, yes, sir, you know, I'll follow you right into... I just don't think that's going to happen. I think they'd go AWOL or, you know, defy orders before they would do something like that. But, so anyways, there's plenty of gunfights in my books, don't get me wrong. Probably plenty of unrealistic gunfights in my books. And like I said, last November I released the New Beginnings, which is the third book in the series, and I'm working on the next book, which is going to be called Dark Skies.
Right. Okay.
Gotcha.
Oh, so I do have another question the foreword in your survival theory book is a biblical perspective on preparedness. Can you if you don't mind, can you elaborate on that?
Not at all. Sure, not at all. Technically, that's the bonus chapter. Yeah. Anyways, comes at the end of the book. So it's funny because I get a lot of. I shouldn't say a lot. I've had a few bad reviews of my book on Amazon from atheists that talk about, you know, the Bible thumping and survival theory. So just for all your audiences that are people that are listening, I don't think I mentioned a single time God or anything in my book at all. But I've had so many people knowing that, you know, I'm a Christian and how I wrote my books in the EMP series and how my characters lived through that scenario, and I didn't hide my faith or their reliance on God. They asked me would I write a perspective on preparedness, right? So I include that as a bonus chapter. So if you're an atheist or you don't believe in God, man, more power to you. That's fine. Just skip the last chapter, right? So anyways, the last chapter, I wrote a physical perspective on preparedness. So there's kind of two camps here, right? So you have the camp of, I realize that something bad is coming in our future, but I'm just going to wholeheartedly trust God to take care of me and my family and rely on faith, okay? And I would never, ever come down on anybody for holding that view, okay? Because the faith size of a mustard seed can move mountains, right? So if that's your stance, then man, more power to you. But I also believe, there's lots of instances from Noah and the Ark and Joseph, and, you know, storing up grain for Egypt. There's a lot of different biblical instances where God told somebody that, hey, something bad is happening, and you need to prepare ahead of time for it, right? So I think if you know that something bad is coming, and there's a chance something bad could happen where you wouldn't be able to feed your family, I think as a father, as a mother, I think it's your duty to put away some food so you can feed your kids, right? I think that's a biblical concept. And like I said, I would never criticize anybody for holding the opposite view of me, but I just laid out I actually kind of laid out both sides of the argument, right? And then
right.
At the end of the day, I said, you know what? At the end of the day, you're gonna have to do a good, you gotta follow God's leading, God's will for your life at the end of the day. So, and I think another big thing I always recommend is that I don't live my life in fear, right? So I write about this stuff. I work with these people all day long. But I come home at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock. I sit down and have dinner with my family every night, and I don't think about it till the next day. It doesn't make me worry. I'm not fully prepared. You're never going to be fully prepared, right? You can't be fully prepared for a situation like this. So you can't let it eat at you. You can't cash in your kids' college fund to go out and spend. You know, you still got to live life, right? And you still got to be good stewards of God's money. So just do what you can as you can do it. I think a big thing is to wrap your brain around, I mentioned earlier in the call, what is the worst-case scenario? Understand that threat, and then make a plan of action on the budget that you have. Basically, what would I do? Because I think a lot of people, like it's real common in the preparedness industry, you know, out here, okay, well, we're, you know, you're new to this, here's the deal. We're going to start you out with prepping for a hurricane or a tornado. and then we're going to bump you up to this level, and then we're going to bump you up to this level. Most of those people are never going to get to the top tier of grid down, prepared for grid down scenario before the event happens. And when that
right.
happens, they're not going to be prepared. They're not going to be mentally prepared. They're not going to make. They're not going to have the proper decision making ability. My philosophy is like, okay, this is this terrible situation. This is my plan of attack is going to be to prepare for this situation. I can't afford to, but I'm going to slowly work my way towards this goal. And if you do that, all those other things, the hurricanes and the, you know, middle of the road financial problem, that stuff will be a cakewalk if your brain's wrapped around something serious.
Right. Okay. The reason I ask about that chapter, the bonus chapter, is because, I mean, people pretty much know Tenderfoot and we're both Christians. We let that be known, and we talk about that quite often.
Yeah.
And I remember when I was, and I know you know Scott Hunt. One time I was talking to Scott, and I said, you know, Scott, if you're preparing just to survive in, you know, hard times, really, what are you preparing for? You know, it's a difference when you're preparing for something that is bigger than yourself. But anyway, but I set you up there because I know that, you know, we don't push our agenda of being a Christian, but we just think it's very important. The other question, I told people in CPN to read your book, and I remember now one of the guys said, he said, I agree with everything he said, except he thinks ducks are better than chickens. And he wanted to know, and I think ducks are too loud, personally. I think that's why I wouldn't go with ducks. But I think rabbits are even better than chickens as well. But so you want to, because you do in there,
sure.
You say chickens. Yeah, go ahead.
If you're a duck man, more power to you. I don't know ducks, okay? I've never personally raised ducks.
I don't know ducks.
You got it. I don't. They are generally louder. I think generally they need, like, a water source. If I could be wrong.
Yes.
So I'm not an expert on ducks. Okay, I think I've made that painfully clear. So I think there's certain prerequisites. Not everybody in the country can have ducks at their location. And I do think chickens are more – you know what? I'm just going to let that go. If you want to have ducks instead of chickens, man, more power to you. But that – I have less like kind of skin in the game on whether you have ducks or chickens than whether you have rabbits. I have a whole chapter on rabbits in my book. I think rabbits are the number one prepper animal that you can have. They're quiet. They require
yes.
very little food and maintenance. You can use their poo and their pee directly on your garden. They breed like rabbits, okay? The average female can have 64 babies a year on a breeding schedule. One female can produce enough protein for a single individual for that year. So if you have a female rabbit for each member of your retreat group, you can have like 30 to 40% of your caloric needs for the entire year. And the other great thing about it is, you know, when you compare it to like an animal like a cow, they take like one-fifth of the amount of food to feed as a cow. They're nowhere near as noisy. And the big thing is if you have a big animal like a cow, and you butcher it, now you've got, what, 1,500 pounds worth of meat that you got to figure out what to do with and how to store
right.
it and how to preserve it and get it till when you're going to eat it. With rabbits, you're constantly breeding them on a schedule, and, you know, every day, every 2 days, you're butchering a rabbit for the pot. So it's a constant supply of food. You don't have to have 1,000 canning jars to hold meat or build some big elaborate smokehouse, which is going to send a signal to your hungry neighbors that you're smoking food. So I really think that they are essentially like the ultimate prepper animal above and beyond just about anything else. And I lay out a couple of different ways of really easy ways to feeding them.
Don't you have to have fat or something to?
Yeah, you gotta have a raccoon or a possum in there.
Yeah, okay.
You do. But you know, I'm just sitting here and you know, people are chatting with me on online and stuff, but it's like
we're brothers from a different mother for sure, because I'm a big rabbit. Matter of fact, we're going to have a CPN campout in a month. And one of the tasks that I've been assigned, because I've been bragging, and I shouldn't be bragging, but I've been telling people I can take a live rabbit and have them on the grill in a minute and 30 seconds. So I guess they're going to test me with that at camp. I'm going to have to show people how to butcher a rabbit. So that's going to be fun. I haven't done one in a while because I moved. And I gave my rabbits to someone else to take care of, and I've yet to bring them back to the house. So,
Instructor, that's how we taught students how to skin and butcher game, because I mean it's the anatomy is very similar to a deer or another large game animal. I mean, as a general,
right,
from the parts. Yep. And so we would use that we would butcher a rabbit in front of the students to kind of show them the anatomy and how you would do it and all that. So I never did it quickly, but I could do it really quickly. Now, I don't know if I can do it a minute and a half for us.
I timed myself a while back, and I haven't done it though in about a year. But I'm gonna have to practice a couple times before I go. But
your local pet store is gonna be running low on rabbits, I think. Practice.
Yeah. Well, actually, I got a guy that supplies Fort Bragg with about 500 rabbits a month. He's the guy that's trained me, so he's a big time rabbit guy. But Tenderfoot brought up a good point. Rabbits lack fat, and so that's where I always tell people you got to have some raccoons or possums, because they're greasy and fat. And but you do have to have fat, because you can die from just eating protein.
Yeah,
I forgot
That's absolutely true, but that's a big thing in the FA. I've actually had people email me that. The FAS handbook says that you can starve to death eating rabbits. Yeah.
Right.
You can starve to death eating just about anything, one thing, right? Meat-wise, right? I mean, if all you ate was duck, you'd have issues too. But, yes, rabbits are very low in fat. Rabbits are part of a well-rounded diet, okay, to quote your mother, right? You can't just eat rabbits, okay? If your sole survival plan is to just eat rabbits, it's not going to go well for you. So you have to have other sources of proteins and minerals and vitamins and so on and so forth. That's why they complement a long-term food storage situation, but they are not the be-all, end-all when it comes to animals, in my opinion. But, you can't live just on rabbits.
Right.
Technically, yes, there are stories of trappers back in, Lewis and Clark days that literally starved to death on. And they were eating lots of rabbits every single day, but they start, they near starved to death on just eating rabbits. So that story is true, but that's true if you just ate squirrel too. If all you ate was squirrel, you'd eventually starve to death, even if you're eating 20 pounds of squirrel a day.
Yep.
Diversify.
Yep. And so one thing I want to tell the listeners that I've been kind of sneaking in there the new PrepperNet concept that we're rolling out in 1 month. And we have an expert panel, and Jonathan has agreed to be one of my expert, because I got to have a like-minded guy on there, And so Jonathan's agreed and to be on the panel, and we'll have his books. We'll also have, I know there's one of your most important chapters. We're going to offer it for free on our site, that you can actually listen to it. And is that chapter 4 in your book?
Electricity?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's chapter 5, but it's somewhere in there.
It's chapter 5, okay. But so
I,
I've got
I,
a big...
I only read it, I don't know where it's at.
Yeah. But so we got big plans with Jonathan in the future, and because I like what he says, and I think that his message needs to get out, and I'm going to help him take his message out, because I ditto his message. and so that's exciting for me. Also, tell us about your consulting business and how you help people, how you can help people, how they can get in touch with you on that, and your best secret kept secret that you've never revealed to anyone, and your credit card information?
I'm not going to do either one of those.
Nice.
My website's called griddowconsulting.com, and probably about 20-30% of my, probably about 40% of my business is phone consultation, where I have clients and I talk to them and I talk them through a lot of different scenarios. They ask me, I do off-site location analysis for existing survival retreats, or somebody's buying a property, I'll review the property, and then most of the time they'll fly me down before they close. And so that's probably about 40% of my business is phone consultation, and then probably about the next 30% of my business is on-site reviews. So I have clients that fly me out to their location, and I do, I spent 2 days traveling and 1 day a full, like, 12 hours of going through all of their stuff. I do an operational security review, go through their long-term food, solar panel. I go through every aspect of their survival retreat and make recommendations to them. And I never get offended whether they take them or not, but that's probably about 30% of my business. And I'm not a math major, so I forget what percentage I have left. I think it's 30. The other 30%, 40% is new clients that are, fairly wealthy individuals, and I'm starting from scratch, helping them find property, designing their survival retreat. I've got about 20 or 30 different off-grid survival retreat designs that they can pick from that we can customize, and then we head to the architect. And I really enjoy those clients starting from scratch, because I'm not coming into a situation where I may have to give somebody bad news or say, hey, that you've got the most wonderful $200,000 bunker buried here, but it's in a really bad spot. You're probably going to get killed if you stay here. I hate having those conversations with people, but that's what they pay me for, right? So that's Grid Down Consulting. It's one of those things. I'm at the point now in my career. I've got my writing career. I've got Grid Down Consulting. I'm in talks with the Discovery Channel, and I've just got so many things going in so many different directions. I just recently, here a couple weeks ago, I'm kind of taking a step back from the consulting business and just focusing on, like, maybe the top 30 or 40% of my clientele, just because I'm only one guy. I just can't – I mean, I've got hundreds of clients, and some of them email me. I just can't keep up. So I'm more than happy to answer. If somebody wants to shoot me an email, tell me their situation, I'd be happy to see if – I'd definitely have a one-hour consulting call with you. And on that first call, I can make a – I can kind of pick through whatever your plan of action is, whatever you have going on, and make a bunch of recommendations that will probably help you out. But as far as taking on, like, new clients, starting from scratch, I'm getting pretty tight time-wise, because I still have to release books. I put out a book like every year and a half. I don't know how Angry American, some of these guys, put out a book every like 6 months, because I just can't do it. I try.
Mark Goodwin does Prepper Recon, and I asked him to be on our panel, and he goes, "Well, I'm trying to cut back even my own podcast, because he wants to put out more books," and so he's writing. I think he's going to produce like 6 books this year, and I'm like, holy cow, how is that possible? But anyway, it's a full time job for him, just to write.
One of my favorite authors is Brandon Sanderson. He's a science fiction writer. When I'm not working, I listen to a lot of Audible books, but I don't listen to anything genre related. I want to check out, right, and to be he writes like 700 page, 1,000 page books. He puts like 3 of them out a year. And I have no, I just can't even fathom writing that many words in a year. So, but that said, that was kind of the point I was getting to. I'm really buckling down. I hope to have 2 books out by November. And then my plan is to start releasing a book every 6 to 8 months in the EMP series that I'm writing. Because, I apologize to the fans out there. I mean, people always, I get bombarded almost daily on Facebook and email and Instagram and everything, and everybody's asking when the next book is. So I promise I'm buckling down. I've got a new system in place. I'm starting writing my day writing at 6 a.m. in the morning. That's been a huge thing for me, where before I would write in the middle of the afternoon, and I might get on emails and then I'll never get to writing. So this new thing of mine. I'm getting up earlier, and I'm just starting my writing first thing in the day when my brain's fresh, and it's been a huge, you know, benefit. I'm putting a lot of words on paper, so books will be coming out more often.
Awesome. That is awesome. Well, Jonathan, we extended the time in the middle of this. I figured out how to extend the time of our podcast being recorded. And I know everybody goes, well, duh. It's actually pretty complicated when you're using a third-party software website. But we thank you for coming on. It's, your website, like you said, is griddownconsulting.com. I'm looking forward to you being on the expert panel. I mean, because the first thing you asked me, well, how much time is it going to take? And I'm like, oh, not a lot. So I think we've worked everything out, and I look forward to working with you in the future. And we're going to definitely have you on when you get this second book coming out. And I've told you, and I'm a fan, that I've been recommending your book to everyone in CPN, and it's going to be required reading in PrepperNet, just because it's so different than what these authors are making up in their books. Because every book makes it sound like, wow, that's not so bad. And they have scenes that are bad, but I think the way you paint it is pretty good. I can't wait to read your EMP series. I've got them. I purchased them. I just got to make time for them. Thanks a lot for being on our show, and I look forward to talking to you soon. And everybody, that's at Grid Down Consulting. This is Jonathan Hollerman. One of my favorite books that has been produced here recently is Survival Theory, A Preparedness Guide, and it says how to survive the end of the world on a budget. I like that. Yep. Hey, thanks a lot, Jonathan. Great, you take care.
All right, gentlemen, take care.
Okay. How did that go? I'm just so glad that someone else is saying the things that I've been saying.
Oh yeah, it was great. It was like listening to
this
you.
This needs to get out. I mean, because we read. I love. I mean, I like Chris Weatherman, Angry American. I like Franklin Horton. I mean, I like Stephen. I like all these guys. And they're great stories, and you can still learn a lot by reading the books.
Yeah. Well, this is a straightforward guide. I mean, the others you get stuff from is good scenarios, whatnot. I'm thinking like survive. This falls with like a survival book.
Yes. Yeah. And it's, I guess this is, I mean, he does have things to buy and stuff like that, but this is a mindset book. So in my book that I'm writing, I've divided that in four areas. One is things you need to buy, things you need to train, skills you got to learn, a mindset, because you got to be in the right mindset to be able to survive this.
Yeah.
I mean, and then also the Christian perspective as well. So I'm kind of breaking it down in four. This is a recommended reading pretty early on, and I put it in my book for mindset. Because it helps you understand, and I got other books. I got, definitely my friend, Mark Goodwin and a lot of his books. And, you read them. There's good information there. You can get a lot. But this was a mindset book. It wasn't more of a book to learn from. Because I do separate, the differences in my book, which is, it's taken me a year, and I'm still three fourths of the way done. But so I don't know how these people write. I'm not a writer. I'm just very good looking and smart.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe that's not true either. No, that's not true either. But wow, we didn't even mention our sponsor, Retreat Realty. John is from Retreat Realty.
And speaking, here we are. We just had that conversation about the bug out location.
Yeah. So he does more. He doesn't consult with the retreats.
No.
He's just a realtor.
Yeah.
And the Appalachian kind of readout, he's your man. He's sponsored the Carolina Prepper Network. He's jumping over with us to PrepperNet. But if you're looking for a place in the mountains of the Appalachians, mostly North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, and Tennessee,
he understands your privacy. He understands what you're looking for, the water sources, security. He's got a good handle on that. He's not your consultant when it comes to, but he can help you find the right land that you're looking for. And that's at retreatrealty.com. Don't call him because he's not at home right now. I think he's driving tonight. He's on his way home. Anyway,
yeah,
we talked earlier, but so give him a call tomorrow. Check out his website, retreatrealty.com. Nothing that we didn't talk about. Is this conflicted card game?
I was really hoping you would ask him.
You know, we did talk about that, and I forgot. There was just too many other better questions to ask.
And it would have went. Yeah.
But the conflicted card game, PrepperNet, which is the new release of, we're going nationwide with the Carolina Prepper Network. We're commissioned, that's a good term to use, to create a deck of cards. And so I'm kind of doing an all-star deck. And I don't even know if I brought this up with Jonathan, but I'm getting people in the industry to give me a scenario, retreat/group related. So all mine's going to be group/mag groups, survival groups. And so I'm getting experts in the field, superstars like Jonathan, and they're going to submit a question. So on the card, it's going to have their question with their name and their website. And it's going to kind of, you know, I'm giving them credit for coming up with the question. So, I've asked people like people I've got in the industry. So, who have I got? I got Jane, Survivor Jane. I've got Rick Austin. I got Scott Hunt. I've got, who else have I got? I got Ryan Mitchell from Tiny Life. I've got Mark Goodwin. I've got a bunch of authors on there. Even the what's his name? Kevin Pierce. That
yes,
he reads all, you know, a lot of the books. He's provided one.
And that card is going to be an audio card.
Yeah,
it's going to have like you know when you open up the Hallmark card.
You know,
that's
a good idea, because what I could do is I could put a YouTube link, and it could be his video reading his question.
Dude, I like that idea.
Because they told me I could do that. They started putting the links in there. So Southern Prepper One did a deck, and Ready Man did a deck, and so Prepper Neck is coming out. We're going to be deck number 11.
There you go.
And so they're pushing out their board game, so it's giving me time with everything I got going on to get it all ready. I've got 35 questions. Then I gave some away to people on PrepperNet. If they came up with a good question, I'm adding it, and they get their own question. So, and yeah, then some of my city leaders, and you got one.
Yes.
And yours was the.
No. Exactly. It's about chickens.
No, but no. Is it? But you did submit one. I forgot what it was, but you did submit a question. It's in my database. So
maybe.
So you wanted me to ask, no, you said it. You said
yeah,
it.
I know, under another name.
So you wanted me to ask him a scenario. Well, I did kind of the gate speech, kind of. That's not,
yeah,
that actually
right,
is going to be one of our cards.
Okay. Oh, that one is.
Yes.
I like that.
Yeah, that's coming from our Asheville leader, Eric.
Yeah.
He said he's coined that term, gate speech.
Yeah. Mine is all about, if you've got somebody in your group that has BO, what do you do?
Are you serious? That's what you submitted? I didn't even read it. I promise. Did you really?
No.
Oh, okay. But
no,
there's some funny ones. There's some weird ones that I didn't really.
That would
pay
be
attention.
A good one.
I didn't pay attention. Well, everyone's going to have BO at that time. What are you talking about?
They will. I don't know.
Man,
I'm
if
gonna,
someone smells
I've
good
got,
at that time, you'll be going, hey, how
I have
you doing?
Got, I've got a stockpile
of deodorant.
Of deodorant.
Yeah, you would. It's hilarious. But, goodness, so PrepperNet's coming in a month. You know, so we've interviewed a lot of people, and we were going to take a break from that, but I just had to have Jonathan.
Well, that's a great, you had to have them.
I had to. And so, but we've interviewed all the authors, and And yes, I'm getting messages as we speak.
And I mean, and right now, your head is huge.
Ooh, come
your
on.
Ego.
It's I've been validated. I mean, I've been preaching this for 5 years, and you don't get what I what I've been preaching is not in a lot of the books.
And how long have I known you now? It's not been 5 years.
It's been way too long.
But probably close to 4 years.
4 years. Okay, yes.
So, and I would have to agree.
Especially the accident.
Yeah.
That you had.
Well, it was funny how we got to know each other anyway, because this is what our conversation was about. It started with rabbits and chickens.
Okay, yes.
And matter of fact, we still talk about that.
Yes. Well, Travis and I, if you don't.
Yeah.
We go to church together.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, that's a teaser right there. It's so funny. Oh,
he lets it slip sometimes.
Every now and then.
It's all right.
It's just a fun game we play.
It is.
Yes. People will hunt you down now.
They will.
So,
only if they knew.
So what's coming up? Okay, so some of the things with Prepping Academy. We've been preaching this for a while. We've been telling people about it, but my barn is not finished yet.
No.
I need help.
Or she should.
It's my doghouse. I need help hanging two doors. So I got two doors.
And I keep offering.
But you got to have the right tools. So I have this shed. It's a big shed.
Yeah.
And it's going to become our studio.
Yeah.
I'm going to put an air conditioner in there, television, refrigerator.
A bed for me.
Escape hatch. You know, it's going to be my ham shack as well because, you know, I do ham.
Yeah.
And so they're going to put my HF ham and all that stuff in there to get it out of the house. And so, the roof is on. I just got to put two double doors in the front. And so I've got to frame them.
I feel like we should contact our friend because I think we can make this a tiny home.
Who were your friend?
For the tiny homes.
Oh, the tiny house guy?
Yeah.
Ryan Mitchell? I'm having lunch with him later this week.
I didn't know if I could.
He didn't know how to do that stuff. He outsourced everything.
I know.
He makes so much money. No, but Ryan, yeah, I'm having lunch with Ryan later this week. But he does the tiny life, by the way. He's one of our expert panel members.
Right, yeah.
He's written a bunch of books. Very successful. But I need a carpenter because my doors, they need to be drilled for the hinges, and it's hard to put a door up two doors together.
Right. So can you get your paint already picked out pink?
Yeah. Dude.
Plaid. When I can.
It's plaid.
Plaid paint. I love it.
It's flannel. So
when I can, I do because you get me all the time. Mm-hmm. So come on.
Yep. So anyway, we're gonna be broadcasting this live. We're gonna do video. We're going to do everything that is up to date. We're going to go from 1998 to 2018 instantly. They had podcast in 98, didn't they?
Why 98?
I don't know. It was a good year. I started my first company in 98.
Yeah. I went into the military.
Yeah. The Navy. You really call that you still call that the military? The Navy? Okay.
Hey, man.
We got
I'm going to be part of Space Force. That's what I'm talking
about. Space Force. Our producer's saying 90 seconds left. So, hey, check out our website, preppingacademy.com, preppingacademy.com. Sign up for our mailing list so we can never email you. I mean, it's been like 2 months since I've sent an email out. So you won't get spammed here.
No.
So check out preppingacademy.com.
Great things ahead.
Anything else? That's it?
I think that's it, man.
That's it. Hey,
it's
join us on
show.
Facebook. Hey, 60 seconds. She's yelling at me.
Yep.
And we're going to, anyway, give us a like us. 5 stars only. If you get 4, you know, we'll send people out to you.
We're looking for you.
And then say very positive things, like go to someone else's podcast you like. Read some of their comments and then put them on ours. Okay. So, again, Prepping Academy. Jonathan.com. We thank Jonathan for joining us tonight, and you guys have a great week. We'll see you again next week, which we don't even know what's going to happen next week, but we'll be here, right?
Unless we're at our bug out location.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Later.
Later.